Dan Ragazzi, back here in Pittsburgh. I think the last time you were here, you did Mozart's The Magic Flute, correct?
That's right, last fall.
And so now we go to the opposite end. To me, one of the great grand works of opera by Verdi, Il Trovatore. It's a war horse. It's been out there for years and years and years. Tell me how you're approaching this particular piece.
Well, it's interesting that you say that it's the opposite of Magic Flute, because that is my big pitch. Like, I'm a huge 18th century opera fan. I love it. And I love the 18th century. I love the notion that if we, like, sit down and work it out, maybe do, like, a little science experiment or go study botany, you know, we'll figure out the mysteries of the universe, right? And the 18th century operas are all very, like, ordered. You know, things happen, like horrible things happen to people, and then the characters try to figure out, like, what's the right thing to do? How do I chart the best path forward? Do you know what I mean? And then they sing an ABA aria about it, and by the end of the, at the recap of the A section with all the ornaments, they've decided what the right thing to do is, and they're going to do it. It's also like the Magic Flute, a numinous world where there is, like, some kind of benevolent deity looking out for people so that the righteous are rewarded and the sinners are not. Trovatore couldn't be more different. Nobody thinks about anything in this opera. If, like, Azucena would just, like, breathe and count to 10, perhaps she wouldn't have thrown a baby on the fire, or at least not thrown her own. Spoiler alert, folks, but it's backstory. Anyway, but do you know what I mean? And then also about that, everyone is completely ruled by their passions in this opera, like jealousy, love, vengeance, anger, like all of it. Count de Luna even says in Act 4, when Leonora comes to beg for Manrico's life, she says, "The merciful gods beseech you to do this." And he says, "The only god I know is vengeance." And this is a world where there's a wheel of fortune, there's fate. God does not show his hand in this one bit. The righteous are not rewarded. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It is, in a way, like one of the most nihilistic operas I've ever encountered.
So here we are with this particular cast, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And what are you bringing into the cast? How are you approaching this particular production?
Well, for us, what's really nice is I've worked on the show a lot, and I know it really well. The cast, everyone in the cast has done the show a lot. They know it really well. And so rather than feeling like I'm, like, starting from scratch or, like, blowing their minds with, "Hey, man, have you ever thought about?" You know, it's just about, like, setting the scene up, refreshing some things, and then, like, kind of turning the dials a little bit, like making sure that we're using the set in a way that tells the story, making sure that, like, certain story moments that I think are important are framed, mm-hmm. and I've made the hinge points. But since these people already know the roles really well, it's fairly simple to do that. Do you know what I mean? We're not starting from zero, in other words.
No, you have a very cast who absolutely knows what they're doing. But talk to our audience about a hinge point. What does that exactly mean for an actor or singer on the stage?
Well, so if you think about, okay, so this is kind of interesting. I once read in a book that every scene is a chase scene. And that you need to think about who's chasing who. And then sometimes that switches in the scene. So, like, a great example of a hinge point would be, you know, in the Count and Leonora's great scene in Act 4, right? Leonora is begging for Manrico's life, begging for Manrico's life. The hinge point of that scene is when he says, "There's nothing you can give me, right, that would make me save that man's life." And she says, "How about myself?" And then the thing completely changes. And from that point on, the Count is chasing her.
So here is this production. Where does the physical production come from that you guys are using?
It comes from New Orleans Opera.
Okay. Because you're dealing with a rake stage and some of the things. So it's, in essence, a traditional production?
Yeah, I mean, it's set in medieval times. There's broadsword fights, you know, there's medieval costumes, there's fire, you know. But I will say that the set is very simple, and in a lot of ways, it's the kind of set you could use for a Shakespeare play, right? It's just got stairs up, it's got upper levels in the back, it's got the rake deck in the middle. It's a very simple set, and I'm using it the way I would use it if I were directing a Shakespeare play, like as if it's a thrust, if that makes sense.
You really enjoy doing this piece. This is one of from what I understand from Maestro, that is one of your favorite operas. So here you are coming in, and you have a very experienced cast. So what are some of the things that you can add and help them with, and even make the characters, I mean, Cornetti's done it 172 times, but you, what can you tell her about this particular production, where she can take it?
Well, you know, part of the deal, right, is that we all, when we come together like this, those of us who have a lot of experience, you know, if you've done, everyone's done the show before, right? So we all have to kind of come together and get to know each other. And I am a director who believes that I want to bring out people's personalities. Do you know what I mean? I'm not interested in like, well, I have, this is my Leonore and you're going to do it. I think that's foolish. It doesn't make any sense to me. So a lot of what I'm trying to do is, early on, is sort of learn who they are, learn what their ideas are. We talk about things a lot. Like, you know, I always thought this scene was about this. What do you think? And then they'll say, oh, you know, I actually always thought it was about this. And I go, oh, well, isn't that interesting? I'd never thought of that before. A great moment when I made this pitch about how nobody ever thinks about anything. Nobody thinks about their responsibility. Lester Lynch goes, DeLuna does. And I said, really? And he said, yes. He comes on at the beginning of the scene in Act 4 and says, you know, I might be abusing the power the prince gave me. And I thought, well, that's fascinating. I said, you bet he does. You're absolutely right, he does. That's very interesting. And so there's like a whole new little level there, right? Or, you know, with Marianne, I think in the Condotta in Act 2, I said, you know, I want to make sure that when you start talking about throwing the your own baby in the fire and how you looked up and saw the evil child of the count, I'm going to put Manrico in your line of sight. And I want to make sure you take him in. And she was like, oh, that's really good. I'm sure sometime in 172 performances she did that, but that, you know, just little stuff like that. You don't have to do a lot, but like every now and then these little moments make a big difference.
Do you have any favorite moments?
Well, I love the duet between the Count and Leonora in Act 4. It's fantastic. Actually, frankly, all of Act 4.
All of Act 4.
It's like my favorite act of any opera. I think it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I think Leonora's big, the La Grande Scena de Leonora is amazing with like the offstage chorus and Manrico in the tower and the Cabaletta. And then this amazing duet, which I think if you were going to like take a picture, you know, if you were going to do like an encyclopedia entry of what is a perfect example of a Cabaletta, the little horsey music, it would be the duet between Leonora and the Count, mm-hmm. which really, it has so much energy. It's so fantastic. And then this, the Act 4, I mean, it is like so Shakespearean and actually even more, it's like Jacobean, mm-hmm. you know, like a Ford play or something. And like the huge, beautiful tenor lines and just all of it. It's great.
Act 4 is the best, but you know, there's the chorus that gets to do the Anvil chorus.
Yeah, absolutely. The Anvil chorus is probably the most famous bit from this show, right? It's mm-hmm. wonderful. My favorite chorus scene, though, is in the convent. Verdi did something like totally fascinating and cinematic that I know they didn't have the technology to do, which is, if you think about it, the soldiers of DeLuna are going to raid the convent, right? And they're outside the convent. And while they're outside, they hear the offstage chorus of the nuns, as if you hear them inside the convent. And then there's like a bleed where they're both singing together. And then the next thing that happens is you're inside the convent. And then the soldiers come and raid the convent. And it's a very cinematic moment. And that, you know, they used painted roll drops, right? So they would have just dropped painted roll drops and had people walk off stage. But it's a fascinating moment. And you can see that he was envisioning a kind of theater that you couldn't quite physicalize yet. I think that's fascinating.
Well, Dan, thank you so much. We are so looking forward. It's been too long since Trovatore, so I'm so glad you're here and have this amazing cast. Pittsburgh Opera is, Pittsburgh people are really excited about Pittsburgh Opera's production.
That's great. Thank you so much.